Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome back to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and I'm here with my mother. Say hi, Mum.
Hi.
So tonight is a biggie.
Pretty big.
It's also a problematic evening because we have been influenced by the chef a lot.
Yep.
And you can't cook the chef's food. So this has been a bit of a difficult task.
Well, I think that he's so clever. The fact that you need to have a delicatessen in your back garden for the ingredients, but his food is so wonderful. Yeah. I think he has influenced cooking enormously and made people really enjoy Middle Eastern cooking plus enjoyment of vegetables.
That's a big statement.
I like everything he ever suggests, really.
I trust him.
I do too.
We have the revolutionary Yotam Ottolenghi coming up on Table Manners.
Can't wait.
We've kind of, actually, this has been real team effort tonight.
Dolly, I think you've done more than I have.
Okay, thank you for acknowledging
that. And also, I think Alex has too. Although I did run around South London for Philo pastry.
Okay, so we have turbot, because Tom Kerridge told us that turbot is
the
king.
The king of the sea.
So we took his advice and we've got turbot, which we're going to pan fry.
Yeah.
I've done an asparagus pistachio with lemon zest and mint side.
Yeah.
And olive oil.
Delicious
and lemon
salsa
juice.
Verde.
Salsa verde, which I have never made before. And actually
it came out better, you know, because it could have looked like mint sauce, you know, with kind of bits.
No, I whizzed it in the NutriBullet.
And it was perfect because it's like
made
a proper
creamy.
Oh, it was great.
It's really good. It's really good. And then I've actually
Samphire.
Oh, yeah, we've got samphire from M&S, which is really good, because I just kind of didn't.
And then you've done these fabulous potatoes.
So these potatoes were inspired by my mate's Instagram, Benny Blanco. I saw him having something and I kind of just thought I'd try a version of.
Yeah.
So I've done butter poached new potatoes, cut in half, and then with smoked rapeseed oil, which I got from this food festival in Dorset in Bridport a couple of weekends ago. And it's, I think, they're called russets, and they're from Dorset. And it's this rapeseed that, actually, rapeseed is a really good oil to use. It's quite buttery.
Yeah.
And just the smoked rapeseed just provides this kind of smoky. And then I put bay leaves in.
Fabulous, darling.
I think they're really good.
I think it really works.
And then
Alex has made a porto calopita, which is an orange pie.
Greek. It's actually what we had at our wedding, and it's
so
lovely.
It might not be exactly the same.
Yeah, but it's not exactly the same, I don't think.
It smelt, the house smelt so delicious when he baked it, because it was just this lovely orangey, cakey smell.
And we're going to have that with creme fraiche.
Yeah.
And lots of rosé.
Yeah.
Mum, we have our first live event going on. It's quite a big one.
I know, darling.
It's Latitude.
Yep.
So I'm playing on the Saturday,
yes,
on the main stage.
Yes.
And then on Sunday, it's your time.
What do you mean, my time?
Your time to meet the fans.
Okay, darling.
How are you feeling about it?
Feeling quite anxious, because if England get to the final of the World Cup, we will only have about half an hour before we have to shift and go and watch it.
The guests may not get much of a meal.
No,
let's
they
just put
might
it that
not.
Way.
I think everyone will want to watch the World Cup, though.
Do you know the guest?
No, I only from listening to him on the radio.
his name is Adam Buxton. Yeah. He's basically one of the best podcasters out there. So
I know, darling. We're always come up against the best podcasters.
I wouldn't say it's up against. But we've
had all these major podcasters.
Is that Otto Lenghi that's just gone?
It's Hopper 7.
Shit. Shit. Yeah. We have Yotam Ottolenghi, who was bang on time.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to be a bit late, but then the Uber just kind of made magic.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Pleasure.
We have
you
so
are
much
one of our favourite people in the world.
In the world. Not just chefs, like not just people.
Yeah. No, we don't.
No.
Honestly.
Apart from Sandy Toksvig, she definitely was up
there. Oh, I listened to Sandy Toksvig on your show. She's so
great.
Gorgeous.
She's so funny.
Yeah, she really is. She's the funniest. And she's got this sense of humour that you just, it's just intoxicating.
I know.
Intoxicating.
You almost can't keep up with her.
Yeah,
she's just so witty.
Yeah, so don't expect me to be anything like that.
Also,
this is why I brought cake.
Yeah.
So I don't need to be funny.
Okay, fine, perfect.
Let them eat cake.
It's a hot day. It's going to be a hot week. And so I think everyone's a little weary. We've all done a day's work.
Well, we've got a rosé here.
Got a rosé. Cheers to that.
And sometimes I add ice to my wine, which is really not a done thing.
Oh no, it's fine.
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
I know
for a chef, it's just it's something you never admit to wanting to do or do. But actually, it just kind of makes the drinking experience.
It makes it longer. Yeah,
it's longer and it's hot and it's. Yeah,
I usually do that because I've got it from the shop and it's just it's hot.
I don't want it.
Okay, fine.
Cheers.
Cheers.
L'chaim.
L'chaim. Thank you for having me. This is so much fun.
Do you know a lot about wine?
No. Well, I know more.
Are you bothered?
I know more about wine than I used to because since having the restaurants, I've had to learn a little bit about wine, and now in the last few years I've become very much into natural wines because that's what we serve in our restaurants mostly. But it's a new thing, like really kind of getting really
into
wines.
Is that like
wines.
The organic wines?
It's essentially,
we had like a version of a Lambrusco the other day, like a fizzy red. And
they could. They do
so
really good,
Lambruscos
now.
Because Lambrusco. What do I know?
It used to be like it had a really bad reputation,
used to
right?
Be
it, like
a joke.
It was the worst wine you could have, and now Lambrusco is having a comeback, and you're doing it naturally, you could have some really good ones.
Much like scrunchies, Mum.
Scrunchies will never come back.
Yes, what are scrunchies? Sorry, I laughed without even knowing what you're talking about.
When you put your hair in a scrunchie.
And people wear those horrible, ruched up, ugly things.
The kind of material around them, and they're very
helpful. Yeah, do you do that?
I mean,
now?
I've been doing it for a while just because they do hold your hair up much better than other hair.
It's practical.
It's very practical. So this relationship with you came from me stalking you.
Yeah, and I will never forget that event.
I stalked Yotam.
And you carried on stalking me while you were on stage.
And it worked.
Which was embarrassing, yeah.
No, I know. Okay,
Carl will never forgive you.
So to explain, I was in Boston playing a gig and I followed Yotam. I used to just call him Ottolenghi. It was just like, you know, like Ronaldo.
There's an Irish.
I think I pointed out he was in Boston.
Yeah, it's probably my mother.
I went to an Irish interview and the interviewer in Dublin called me Yotolenghi. And then he called me Yotto. And then someone was was whispering in his ear that he got it wrong. So it was Yoda.
Yoda?
So Star Wars.
Which one would you have preferred out of those three?
I'm still thinking.
So I was in Boston. I was playing a gig. I saw that you were promoting Jerusalem, which was in Anthropology over the road. And it annoyed me that they got rid of the beautiful book cover because in America
the American
they
always
put
have
fried egg on it or something.
They
like,
always have like they always shakshuka. Choose a different it was like a shakshuka they always choose a different cover in America.
So I was just like, well, he's here, this is my chance. And it was very serendipitous. And you came and
you tweeted me and said, oh, I happen to be in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you know, stone throw from where you guys are, would you like to come to my gig? So I said to Carl, do you know Jesse Ware? He goes, no, I don't know what Jesse Ware is. So, sorry, this is all coming out now.
You know,
we're not music, we're not that much into the music scene. So, you know, we didn't know. So Carl texts his friend Nick, who's a musician, aspiring musician, and he said to him, Nick, Jesse Ware, yes, you have to go.
Thank you so much,
so,
Nick. Thanks, Nick. Yeah.
So we come there, and we were quite early. Because, you know, I don't know what happened. So we arrived there, we had dinner in the restaurant, then we walk into the the gig. Mm-hmm. It was just amazing. It was so nice until Jessie started to stalk me from the stage. So she goes like, my favorite chef is in the crowd. And I look, Carl and I look at each other, and then people start looking at us.
Oh God, did you get recognized?
And they go like, oh yeah, you're like, and then I go like, oh my God, this is now. And then the funniest thing was that she messed up big time, because she said, oh, you know, my mom really wanted you to go out with my brother. And I
didn't know you were married.
Yeah, I know that
one. So this was awkward.
And Carl and I were actually in Boston expecting our first child. So it was kind of, because our surrogate was in Boston. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it was hilarious. And then we got talking to these two guys, and they said, oh, I just bought your book for my mom for her birthday. It was all fine. It was just
the rest
funny.
Is history.
The rest is history. That's why we're here now.
We've tried to look laid back and like there's no stress in the kitchen. Actually, today has been pretty chilled, considering it's you. We've been prepping this life for a lifetime.
Yeah. But we never know what to give you. That's the problem.
It is a problem.
Because we always love all your recipes. So we generally cook like you for ourselves.
People have cooked my food for me a few times.
How does that work out?
So you go to dinner and then someone says, I'm really sorry, but I cooked one of your dishes. And then I think, and then you know, in actual fact, it's fine. Because it's actually good, because it gives me reassurance that people cook, and I try, and often they get it even better than I did.
No
I'm
way.
Embarrassed.
No.
Yeah, I went to these guys and they made this garlic tart that I have in plenty, and it was bloody delicious.
Did they add anything?
I don't think they added anything. I think they just, I don't know, but it was
Maybe
really
it was
good.
It was just nice because you didn't cook it and you kind of had the relaxation of not having to. Do you worry about when you cook for people?
You know what it is when you cook? You don't want to eat. Do you have that feeling?
No.
You taste all the time. And you get to the meal and you go like, give me a glass of something, but I don't want. But when you kind of manage to just not eat for a few hours, which hardly ever happens to me because I'm always eating, then you arrive and you're really hungry and you start drinking.
And
it was so good, yeah.
If you didn't cook Middle Eastern food, what's the other cuisine that you really
Asian,
like?
Some kind of Asian cuisine. So I traveled with a friend of mine, Helen. Helen Goh, she's the co-author of my previous book. And she's was brought up in Malaysia, then moved to Australia. And I love Malaysian food.
Yeah,
like I traveled in Asia and Malaysian food is kind of, it's so interesting because it's like three cultures. And I think when you get like this mixture of culinary cultures, it's a bit like Jerusalem, you know, you get those kind of hybrids, which are so good, or even just things that are kind of evolving.
Yeah.
So you've got Malay, which are you know, they're more local kind of. Everybody's local, and you've got Chinese and you've got Indians, and those are all great nations for food. And then you come to Malaysia and you've got all those things that evolved there, their versions of.
Did they start chicken satay?
Well, chickens, it's kind of Indonesian Malaysian.
Right.
So Indonesia has, so the Malay are kind of, I don't want to offend anyone, I always get it wrong, but it's kind of that part of the world. But then you've got like food that actually, but my favorite is nasi lemak. Have you had nasi lemak?
Nasi is rice.
So it's coconut rice.
Yeah. Is it the blue coconut rice?
No, it's normally served white. Okay. And it's got some dried anchovies in it, which give a really good flavor.
Sounds great.
And a little bit of kind of poached chicken. It's very simple, but it's kind of tastes great. Perfection.
Yeah.
And I don't know, this is one of the things that I realized over the years that sometimes two people can make the same thing and it could be so good and so bad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well.
So there's like the way people cook is just incredible. So Malaysia is definitely the place.
Are your boys adventurous in what they like to eat?
They do. When
tell
they,
me.
They do.
Tell me they eat aubergines and pomegranates.
No. They may be pomegranates,
sumac?
But definitely not aubergine. No, look, I don't try.
I would be shoving that za'atar down their bloody gob. That's what I'd be like, you're going to love this.
What about your girl?
I tried so hard. I was like doing gourmet meals for her at the beginning, like roasted butternut squash risotto with deep fried sage. Like, it was so ludicrous. And bless her, she loved dal and all that, and she's gone right for beige food all of a sudden.
She loves pasta and a sausage.
You need to.
I think what I learned is that, first of all, you always lose when you fight with kids over food, because you know they've got more willpower than we than the adults do.
It's true.
And the other thing is that you you need to accept that they've got like a different palate. So my kids would one day be great, you know, they'll eat broccoli and beans and this and that. The next day it's just pasta. And you need to accept it and go with it. And that's my thing. So. I'm kind of stoic about it. Carl is, bless him, he is the one who really struggles because he makes their food every day. And they come home and you never know. It's like a Russian roulette. You know, you never know what they're going to eat or not. I'm not hungry. Off they go.
Well, that's, the whole meal It's goes. Funny that they'll always have a mini milk though, won't they? They'll always have an ice cream or a mini milk. But you've been, you know, you've written about having children in The Guardian quite a lot.
I did, after Max was born. I've written... So I kind of... I never wanted to talk too much about my private life before podcasts. And then we had our Carl and I were we were trying to figure out how we're gonna have a baby. So you know we were all sort of we tried all sorts of things. We had relationships with women in order to kind of co-parent, which was having a child together with a woman or a couple of women that would we would kind of have two families come together, and we tried all these. All these kind of structures, and it didn't work for us.
How long was the process? The process, those structures.
It took about 2 or 3 years, where we kind of trying to build up relationships, and then realizing that everybody wanted more than half a child. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like it was almost
they
like
wanted their own child.
It was almost like negotiating a divorce settlement before you've even been married, and before there isn't a child. So we were talking about visiting rights. About a child that wasn't even born, you know. It was kind of like, who gets the child when? And then, so this whole thing, I think we were a bit insecure about having a child as two gay men. You know, we were thinking, oh, we need a woman involved in this thing, which was, I think it's a little bit like kind of a hang-up that, you know, a child needs a woman in their life and otherwise we're inadequate. I look at it like this now.
Alex would say heteronormative.
Yeah, exactly. Heteronormative. It's like that kind of idea that
that's the only way it can be right.
If it, and now from, you know, 5 years back, and you know the kids have women in their lives, they have a godmother they go to very often, and they're perfectly happy. And Carl and I are super adequate parents. You know, we do what we need to do, and you know they're fine. And I'm sure sometimes they ask themselves, hey, why don't we have a mother? And then we go, but how lucky are you? You've got two dads. And, you know, sometimes a friend comes over and they go, and then the friend comes, goes back home and says, has a fight with his mom and says, I want two dads. I hate you.
I think so, I'm so glad you did write in The Guardian because I think you're quite inspirational for same-sex couples that wanted to have a baby and didn't have the courage to think about it or try it and never thought it was possible.
This is why I did it. So my initial reaction that is that I'm not talking about my private life. It's not relevant. You know, I'm a chef. But then I thought, and Carl was actually pushing me to do that. He said, well, you kind of have a responsibility because, you know, people know you, know about you. And keeping it private is almost selfish. You know, we've gone through the process. We've seen it. And some people would like to know that it's possible, what it has to do, what's involved. And I did it, and I was so happy I did. I just told it as it happened, the whole process, all the stages, how we went to America, how we found our surrogate, how we had a baby, how I met Jesse Ware. and people were really warm about it. And they said, you know, people still come to me and said, you know, this was a seminal article because I read it and I decided, I'm going to have.
And also, you're not someone who seeks out publicity anyway. So you're not someone who's writing something about their private life every week.
You're not doing a photo shoot in Hello, are you?
Yeah.
No, or modelling for Marks and Spencer's with your two sons yet.
Well, I mean, that could happen when he has his food.
Yeah, it could happen. I don't think it will happen, but I think the reason why we did it is because we thought it would be good and we kind of had the responsibility. It was somewhat a little bit, and I write it in the piece, it was a bit like coming out. It was like a second coming out because I think as gay men, we always think, and gay women, I'm sure it's the same, but I'm not a woman. But there is a kind of this thing about privacy, which is somehow sacred. And I think, fuck privacy. I mean, what is that privacy all about? Again, it's a kind of a chip on the shoulder. Mm-hmm. Some things are private. No, it's not private. We have a boy. We have two boys. We can talk about it. Everybody talks about their children. So I learned to kind of be more out through my children. It's not private. I can talk about it. I've got kids and I'm a gay man. And I think that was quite liberating mm-hmm. for me to kind of just completely tell it as it is.
Do you feel like a real pressure to carry? I mean, you've got a new book coming out, mm-hmm. haven't you?
Yeah,
simple.
You do a piece every week.
Thank
in
you
the
for
Guardian.
Simple. Yeah, I really appreciate that one. Yeah. I think a lot of Lady fans are going to appreciate.
I know. My
that
sister
one.
Said to me, "Finally, I can cook your recipes."
I know. Not yeah.
Because I kind of realized that some people cook ottolenghi only on the weekend because there's just a lot of shopping and prepping
the recipe,
involved.
Yeah, and the ingredient.
But once you got it, it's okay.
It's okay. Yeah, but it could be a bit intimidating, and so the idea of just taking those recipes and kind of just simplifying, kind of narrowing it down. What is really essential here, and how could you make it simple for some people? Where was kind of it made sense for me to do this? So yeah, that's the book.
When's it out?
In September.
Do you think you've contributed towards Israel becoming a real culinary hotspot?
Because people
are talking about Tel Aviv as the place to go to eat now.
And rightly
Jesse's
so.
Jesse's desperate for us to go.
Yeah,
and
rightly
eat.
So. The food scene there is just marvelous. Yeah. I can't take any of the credit for that. I think what has happened in Tel Aviv is that in the period of like 15 years, it kind of transformed itself from like this culinary desert. I'm saying that, you know, there was always good kind of like hummus joints and, places that you would go and eat, like, but like cutting edge, like going to serious restaurants, doing really good food in a way that is super interesting is really kind of only 10, 15, 20 years. And before that, like when I was growing up, this just didn't exist. So and also the nice thing about it is that the way Tel Aviv does it is that, or other places in Israel as well, but they've taken and kind of put together the foods of the various Jewish diaspora, you know, like North African Jews and Middle Eastern Jews and a bit of the Eastern European Jews, and also mixed it up with the Palestinian cooking. So you get like, it's kind of a mishmash of cultures that is really quite nice. Because in a sense, up until 20 years ago, it was all very separate. And, you know, each diaspora would cook their own food. And I remember growing up in Jerusalem, and I remember we used to have this kind of, they were called like this thing where each kid brought their own food from their own diaspora. Like, you know, if you were
like
from...
Like show and tell.
Like, it was like a day in school where everyone had brought their own food from their own, culture. Yeah, their mom or dad cooked from their own culture. And there was a lot of Ashkenazi Jews, and they always brought all these great gefilte fish things that nobody wanted to have. You know, gefilte fish is fried.
Yeah,
it looks better, but in Eastern Europe, it's kind of boiled. Yeah. And it doesn't, even if it tastes good, and I have to say, I don't dislike it. Yeah. It just looks bad. And normally Eastern European food looks quite gray. And my dad is Italian. We're an Italian Jewish family. So I brought pizza. You can remember, you can imagine how popular I was. You know, I wrote like, my dad made like dough and fresh and kind of put all the toppings together.
So were your parents great cooks?
Yeah, they're both really good cooks, both my parents. My mom is from a German family and my dad was from an Italian family. And we had good food. They're quite adventurous, but also they have kind of a solid kind of culinary tradition. And I think I kind of had the best of all worlds, because I had my parents cooking kind of European food, and then obviously there was all that stuff going on in markets and kind of Palestinian food, which is just so great. Mm. Falafel and hummus and all the baba ganoush, all the kind of dips and spreads of Palestinian cooking that is just so good. So I kind of experienced everything.
Were you always into your food, or were you...
Into eating, not so much into cooking.
Oh,
so
okay.
Yeah, I was really like, as a child, I used to go like, my parents would take me to a restaurant for my birthday. That is just obnoxious, right? Like, that was my present, to go to a really good restaurant.
No, I get that.
Yeah, you get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think other kids want like a really great present or something.
It worked out for you. So, exactly. I mean, yeah, so it's okay.
Yeah, completely. And there was this restaurant in the old city in Jerusalem. And you know, forgive me, all the Jewish listeners, that was, they served prawns, and I loved prawns. And like, there was the only place in Jerusalem you can get prawns. So they had these prawns that were kind of quickly cooked in butter and garlic and a bit of lemon juice, which is still kind of the best way to cook prawns. And I remember that was where we went. It was called Dolphin. It was in the Arab part of the city where they could eat prawns, and my parents used to take me there for like my birthday.
Is it still there?
No, unfortunately it's not there. It's a kind of a sad story because it was co-owned by a Palestinian and a Jew, and it was quite difficult over time. There was a lot of pressure on, from all sorts of reasons. At some point, someone tried to set it on fire.
Oh, no.
And so they moved to Tel Aviv, and over the years, I'm sure for various reasons, it doesn't exist anymore.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We're going to actually put the fish on in a minute because otherwise it's just not fair on you because we have got food.
He to might eat. Give us some advice about cooking.
Yeah, actually, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, well, what am I here
we
for?
Bought turbot.
Yeah.
Because John Kerridge said it's the king of the sea.
Yeah.
Because I love halibut. And so he said, no, turbot. So
and
we
turbot
bought...
is so popular at the moment.
Oh, is it?
No, yeah,
is
there's
it?
A restaurant called Brat.
Yes, it's supposed to be amazing.
In Shoreditch.
Have you eaten there?
Yes, I have. And they're famous for their turbot.
How do they cook it?
So they cook it on the grill, and they've got this amazing contraption where they put the whole fish in and they cook it really slowly.
Right, now we've got small pieces.
Yeah, you've got pieces.
We're just going to pan fry it.
Feeds like 3-4 people, so you wouldn't really... Yeah.
Should we take you through the menu?
Yes, please.
Okay, turbot cooked.
Pan fried.
However you...
Pan fried.
Just a little bit of butter.
Yeah,
and
yeah, we're going to have some samphire. And then I
think this is a really good choice for me because I love pan-fried fish, any fish, and turbot is a great fish.
Okay,
so thank you, Tom Carriage.
And how long will it take? How long do you think you should fry it for?
Depends on how thick your pieces
this
are.
This is so helpful.
I need to
We've
see
got a
them.
Thank God you're
there.
Here. Yeah.
You know, sometimes if they're really thick, so you can start pan-frying them,
yeah,
stick
and
them in the
butter,
oven
yeah.
to finish them off. So that's up
and
to you.
And then we're going to have new potatoes, are they? I don't know what they are. I basically saw my friend Benny Blanco, who actually you met when we had the barbecue. He was
at
my producer friend.
Yes.
Who you commented on his croutons, and he's never
ever.
Left. He's just basically tells me about how he made the best dish of that day. Because obviously it wasn't a competition, Benny, and you're
it was
a dick.
Just,
but
yeah.
like you did comment on his brilliant croutons.
Yeah, I remember
anyway,
Benny very well.
Yeah, you can't forget it.
No.
So Benny had his mate round, and I just saw on Instagram that he was having smoked, butter poached potatoes smoked. And then they had caviar on
Delicious.
Top. So I thought, oh, sod it. I've got this amazing smoked rapeseed oil that I got from this food festival in Dorset. And I've done it with bay leaves, which makes it, I don't know.
Nice,
basically,
yeah.
It's nice.
Very good.
And then I had a delicious breakfast at, have you heard of Esther's?
Yes, of
it's
course.
So
yeah.
good.
It's in East London.
Yeah,
yeah
and
yeah.
it's right by my daughter's nursery. And so I
Very
had
popular
breakfast
for breakfast.
There. Yeah, really good. And they did like sourdough with poached eggs, and they did asparagus with kind of pistachios, olive oil, lemon, and they had like Lancashire cheese in it. Or I think it was some kind of hard cheese.
Gosh,
but
delicious.
I haven't done cheese with this because I thought we didn't need it. But I've just done asparagus with some mint and pistachios and lemon zest.
So I see what you're doing. You're kind of just de-otolengifying the whole meal. So it's completely like simple in a kind of like, it's quite British really, isn't it?
I don't really know. I tried, you know, I could use some of your lemon salt that I do love. Maybe we'll do that just to otolengi
it. I think it was a great strategy.
Okay,
well
thank
done.
You.
Yeah.
We also made salsa verde.
Oh yeah, we've done salsa
verde. Oh yeah, well that is a little bit, but it's still like completely... it's fine. It's,
you know,
it's
we had to go in a different direction because we weren't going to cook your food.
Do you want me to start cooking
it? Yeah, I do. Because everything's pretty much ready. I could just do the asparagus.
Yeah, and I can just drink my rosé.
Yeah, I need to fill it up.
Your tan's basically cooking our dinner for us.
Yes, the potatoes are done.
Oh, the samphire. Yeah, but the samphire doesn't need very long, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Basically, your tan's in charge of the turbot.
See, it almost cooks through. And then you're going to get it like a kiss. Oh, we're missing one fish.
No, there's two more here.
Oh, okay.
So we'll have to do it two at a
time. Good thing he likes us, I think. Basically. Yeah, you thought he was coming here to get a home-cooked meal? Fucking hell, you are basically Gordon Ramsay. Your tan cooking, you're doing nothing.
Oh, wow, that's worked out really well. No, it's because we've got some lemon, darling.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, we need a lemon.
And where's the salsa verde, sweet?
Oh,
yeah, hurry up.
If I just sit this samphire in
It's like a tutorial. Mum's complaining, as per her.
Salt,
Jess, she's such a fucking bitch. You know where the salt is, thank you.
The one that you just used.
The lemon one.
Oh, hold on. What?
The lemon salt's in here.
Oh, it's somewhere.
I'm really sorry that you basically had to cook the dinner. Yes, ma'am. Sorry about that.
This is a first on the podcast.
First on the podcast. I'm really glad it's you.
Yeah, well, Sadiq Khan wouldn't do that, would
no.
he?
No.
No, Sadiq wouldn't have done that.
On Ramadan.
Bless him, it was Ramadan.
Yeah, that's a lot to ask from the mayor to cook his own dinner on Ramadan before he can actually eat.
We are sitting down and basically, we got Yotam to cook our dinner, which has worked out brilliantly for us.
Well,
that's a first for the podcast.
Carl will tell you that this never happened in our own house because he does all the cooking, so it's a novelty. So what's in this sauce? Oh, that's the salsa verde?
That's the salsa verde.
I want to try it.
Tastes nice.
Tastes really nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
So it's got capers, mustard.
Yeah, mustard, parsley, basil,
mint.
Yeah.
Jewish, like, doctor, what's her name, Mrs. Elwood's
sweet
and sour
we didn't have Cornish on.
Cucumbers. Honey, let's get some more lemon.
I like that one.
And there's potatoes there.
The fish is delicious. So meaty and beautiful.
The fish is cooked to perfection, thanks so much. It is good.
It really is good. Turbot is a great fish.
So you've talked about Brat, but are there any other restaurants that you absolutely love in London?
Because
I think everyone always loves a recommendation.
Yeah, you know, there've been some delicious, great restaurant that have opened recently, and one of my favorite is called Sabor.
Sabor, where is it?
Sabor, from Spanish, the Spanish for flavor. It's off Regent Street, Haddon Street.
Is it near Nopi then?
It's near Nopi.
Okay, is that how you discovered it?
No, I discovered it because people were talking about it, and it's the head chef was cooking at Barrafina.
Oh, okay. I've never been, but Tom said that it was one of his favorites, but. Yeah, it's great. You're on stalls, aren't you? And it's kind
That was because Barfino said you would sit around a bar, but they had a couple of branches. But Sabor is just delicious, wonderful Spanish food of all, you know, they've got like, do you like croquetas?
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah, who doesn't?
It's so they make
fattening, forget fattening. It's just so delicious. So they make you drink vermouth from the tap. With some ice, and you eat croquetas.
This sounds really fun.
It is really fun. And then they have also really elaborate dishes. But she's just the most incredible chef. And she's also really nice, which is kind of annoying.
Who is this lady?
I can't remember how to pronounce her name now.
But she's a Spanish
chef. She is a Spanish chef, and she's fantastic.
You
have. But I have to say,
this was really nice.
The food was delicious, and it's so not nice not to eat
Middle East.
My food, Middle Eastern food or anything.
The fish was worth it.
British food.
Mum, I think we did all right. High five.
I don't think we did all right. I think he did all right.
You basically cooked the main thing.
No.
Well done.
Yeah,
well done. It was really good. Well done. Teamwork makes the dream work. So we ask everybody, you've listened to the podcast, what is your worst table manner?
So, I'm not too fussed about table manners. What I don't like, and it's not a manner, it's just the way people eat, is when people pile lots of things on the plate.
Oh my God, guilty.
Yeah, you guys just did it. So I went in with my asparagus, right? No, the thing is, I've got this kind of...
Your time, Israelis do it.
I know. Well,
they pile it up and then they're on the phones and they're eating it.
You know what is... No, it's not about piling up the food. I don't mind it that it's big and piled. It's just that you can't tell the flavor. So like... Yeah. You know, like a Christmas dinner meal is my idea of hell. So you've got,
it's my favorite.
So you've
meal.
Got like potatoes and mash and gravy and cranberry sauce and it's just like how can you taste anything?
But that's the whole point.
It's just a big mishmash of deliciousness.
But for someone that really loves food and wants to taste things, it's just like you might as well just have swallowed it and brought it back up.
It's true.
That's kind of what happens actually.
You don't like Christmas
No,
dinner.
I love Christmas dinner, but I just do it in stages, which I guess sounds really poncy, but I like
it's
my...
It's because you're an Italian.
That's my dad. My dad
the
eats
Italian,
like that.
They eat their protein separately from their carbs.
That's how my
veggies.
Dad eats. He never puts... He says, let me finish my asparagus before I load my plate with someone else, which is really not Middle Eastern. And so this is... It's not a table manner. It's just a way of enjoying
of
food.
But I'm worried somebody's going to get that asparagus before I get to it.
Yeah. Well, Jesse,
that that's, is a problem.
That's my mentality.
That's your problem,
darling. That is my problem.
Did your brother and sister steal your asparagus?
No, to be fair. No.
They never stole anything. They're both skinny ones.
I stole it from them.
Yeah.
Lots of it.
So you were expecting something to happen that never happened.
I don't know.
But Jesse,
like,
we always had plenty of food.
I know, but it's just... I like to make sure I've got everything.
I know, darling.
It's terrible. Yeah. We also asked this question, and I think everyone's going to be really interested to know, what would be on your desert island meal?
Last Supper.
It's a very contentious issue, whether we call it the Last Supper, Death Row, Desert Island. It's confused a lot of people. So...
What is your
ultimate dish? Three, starter, main, pudding.
It's not going to make sense in one particular supper. So one thing that my grandmother,
my
Italian grandma used to make was gnocchi alla romana, which is semolina gnocchi.
Oh.
So you know what it is? Yeah. It's like essentially it's cooked semolina with cheese that is set and then you cut it into kind of squares or circles. And
I've never had it.
And you sprinkle it with cheese and you put it under the grill. So essentially... It's set semolina.
So you cook it like a wet semolina, wet gnocchi.
Yeah.
And then you...
You cook it like polenta, right?
Like polenta,
so you cook it with milk and nutmeg and that until...
Like
and then
a wet
polenta. Yeah, exactly. But semolina is a bit more kind of subtle than polenta. And you set... And it also sets a bit softer than polenta. You set it, you cool it, and then you can cut, you know, circles or squares or whatever you want. And then you kind of overlap them in a baking tray and you sprinkle it with more butter and cheese and you put it under the grill. So it goes like crisp on top and like feathery and ethereal on the bottom.
Oh, wow.
And it's just the most delicious thing. It's
that was
really,
your grandma's dish?
That was because my grandma was from Rome and she was from the Jewish ghetto in Rome. And this is very typical for Roman cooking. So that's a starter, but it's not going to make sense as a meal, but I'll just give you a bunch
matter.
Of things. So
we'll
Sadiq Khan stole my thing because he likes lentils and rice and I like lentils and rice, but they're very different. So the Mejadra, mm-hmm. the lentils and rice that is cooked in Palestinian cooking mm-hmm. has got those kind of spices that are quite different from Indian. So the thing is, it's all about the fried onion. If you ever made Mejadra, you cook your lentils... You cook your rice.
I think you made it for us.
Did I make it
for
us? I may have made it for you because it's my favorite thing. Yeah. And I cook it for my children and they love it. It's like fried onions. You can't go wrong. So it's lentils, brown or green lentils and long grain rice. And spices like cumin. You can add a bit of turmeric. You can add a bit of allspice or cinnamon. And lots of fried onion. Mix it all together and you serve it with a dollop of yogurt. It's just the best thing.
I'm going to do that for my daughter this week.
Yeah. Seriously, she will love that. My boys love lentils. And what kids like lentils? No, and it's just thanks... I mean, actually, kids like dal, don't they?
Yeah, I mean... She used to, but she wouldn't touch it with the barge pole. I do a lentil bolognese, like, so she likes that. But how do you get your onions crispy?
So there's all sorts of crispy, right? So you get, like, sometimes if you want crispy...
You put them in flour.
Yeah. So yeah. You toss them in a bit. You take, like, a tablespoon of flour and you take your sliced onion and you just toss it together with some salt. And then you put it in quite a bit of oil. So, like, almost deep fried, but, like, you know, 2 centimeters of oil. And they crisp up quite easily, but you don't put too much, so otherwise they start to stew. You want them to crisp, and then you lift it up. But some people don't mind that it's a bit more mushy, more like caramelized onion, and then you put just a bit of oil. Flour always helps to kind of, and then you just cook it for a bit longer. So it's up to you with the way you like your onions. But onions that are cooked for a while, they go all sweet and delicious, and kids love that.
So you'd have that as your main? Well, any sides? Would you have any greenery?
Well, that really goes well with a good chopped salad, right? Mm-hmm. Like tomatoes, cucumbers, coriander, lemon juice, and...
Israelis do the best chopped salad.
Israelis.
Why is it?
Well, I think
it's the best chopped salad, I think, Israeli salad.
But you know that it's like...
It's Arabic.
The Arabs would say that.
Sorry, okay, it's Middle Eastern salad.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes, yeah.
Mm. It's just about the qualities of the tomatoes and the cucumbers and the chopped. And it's like you need to make sure that the tomatoes are not too watery and the cucumber is not too watery. So actually the cucumbers we were talking about, the crisp cucumbers, like they call them Lebanese or Greek or whatever. They're really nice and crispy. The moment there's water in your cucumber, it kind of just lowers the level of your salad immediately.
They've got a thicker skin, those cucumbers, haven't they?
Yeah, depends which ones, but you can just kind of crisscross it like zebra, so you get a bit of skin because skin is nice, but some of them don't have, so you just go with your peeler and you create like a crisscross and then you chop them up.
What's your pud? You've got plenty to choose.
It's so difficult to choose a pudding. But I go back to the Italian heritage and I love a sabayon. You know, like a zappaione, which is
zappaione.
So essentially, it's really only 3 ingredients. It's kind of, it's a dessert wine like a marsala. It's egg yolks and it's sugar. And you cook it over a bain-marie, so over boiling water. And you whisk and whisk and whisk and whisk and whisk. And it puffs up and it goes really creamy. And you can't believe it doesn't have any dairy product. Mm. Like you haven't kind of folded in some cream or something. So that's the kind of the basic one. And then you can just spoon it over poached fruit or fresh fruit. Mm. And it's kind of warm and delicious. But you can also let it cool down and then fold some cream into it. And then it's kind of a little bit more like a desserty custardy thing.
If you weren't the chef, what would you have been?
I love current affairs and politics. I read in the news every day. And in the previous incarnation, I used to work in the news desk in an Israeli newspaper called Haaretz.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I used to do that. So I used to get all the news coming in at, between 4 and 7 and just put it all together. And by 11, we had a deadline. It's a bit like a kitchen. You've got like this kind of mad rush to get everything in.
You're still addicted to
and
news.
I love the news. I love news and I love current affairs. And I read it on my phone. I get the paper on the weekend. I love the both the news and the commentary. So I might have stayed a journalist in another life. And when I moved from academia and journalism to cooking, I told my parents, I'm going to take a year off and I'm going to check this out. And in my mind, I thought, this is not going to work. I'm going to go back to the newspaper. I'm going to go back to university or just do something which is much more similar to what I did before. I never thought that this is going to work out.
You mentioned that when you decided to leave academia, your parents were disappointed that you were going to be a chef. Are they still disappointed?
No, when I turned 40... And we had a big birthday party for me and lots of people came and my family and my parents came along. And then one of my friends said, let's go around the table. And there were about 30 people around the table and everybody will wish your Tom something for the future. And my dad was the last to go. And my dad said, the only thing I'd wish for him that he doesn't listen to me ever again.
That's so sweet.
Which was really sweet because it was kind of just admitting, that... It was lovely.
He must be very proud.
Yeah, they're both very proud.
Should we have some pudding?
Oh, yeah, let's
see if you can...
Yotam has kindly brought mother and I both a chocolate cake. Is it a chocolate cake with a ganache?
Yeah, it's a very simple chocolate cake with a ganache.
Don't believe it's simple. Don't believe
it,
that
it
one.
It really is simple. You don't even need a food processor for it. You just take your butter and your a bit of melted chocolate, and there's a bit of coffee there, and eggs and flour, and you just whisk it all together and pour it in.
So we're going to have both puddings, because we've made one too, but we can't not try an Ottolenghi made cake when it's on the table, and I'm sure everyone wants to know how delicious
it
is.
But I'm dying to see this dessert you were telling me about.
Well, it's Alex is so good at them, considering this was his first attempt at making it.
It's almost like it's almost got like a brulee topping.
Well, Alex said when he put it in the oven, it looked like a big omelette.
Oh, we're not going to have the
not together, darling.
Not going to have them together, obviously, because I was about to
you learned something.
What do you think? Does it taste like it's fine?
It tastes very orangey. It's nice.
It's nice. It feels it's more dense than what we've had in Greece. Like, no. It could be a bit fluffier.
It's called Porto Calopita.
I think if you had less of the dough and more of the rest, it would be a bit lighter. That's all.
It's such a really weird thing to make. And this isn't how I thought it was made. I thought it was a cake with orange
it's
syrup.
It's definitely tasty. It just kind of needs a bit of refining.
The flavours are really good.
Mum, that was the biggest amount of flan. I feel like that was an orange flan.
That's really gone straight to the bottom of my stomach.
And
I
to
think,
my arse.
Like an anchor.
That was really huge.
I know, I'm sorry.
It needs work, but that's okay. We'll just get to our tasting
Alex
kitchen.
Alex will be very upset.
Testing
he said
kitchen
it was a shit
pepper.
Recipe.
Don't blame it on Alex.
No, it's
thing.
Not
He's
Alex.
He's not here to defend himself.
No. He was the one who said, I don't think you should. I'm really worried about serving this.
Oh, I mean, it tasted. Look, we
tasted it.
It
was dense.
The flavor and the texture. So the flavor was great. The texture was a bit.
Yeah,
hard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna cut some of this cake. But I mean, it's gonna be a friggin' sliver. That is light as a feather.
Well, the cake is this. The ganache is really nice because it's kind of just.
Ganache is great, isn't it?
Oh, it's a God. Dark chocolate ganache.
It's a dark. The ganache only has three ingredients in it, which is butter, cream, and chocolate. I mean,
you can't go wrong, really.
That is delicious. It's like velvet.
I have died. Yeah.
This is actually. I'm not just saying it. It's a really, really easy recipe to make. And it
have
makes
you got
the,
this in your simple?
It's in the book Sweet, which I published last
Sweet.
Year.
Yeah.
So it's called a take home chocolate cake, and it's something that you do in one bowl. Without a mixer, so you take everything and just put it all together and pour it into it. Really is very simple, and it makes a great birthday cake because it's kind of kids like that. You just take the coffee out.
I feel like that seems like quite a kind of sophisticated birthday cake. Like,
so if you take the coffee out, because there's a bit of coffee in there, and leave just that sponge, I think kids would like that. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on Table Manners and for cooking our dinner.
Yeah, thank you.
First.
Yeah, Tom Kerrish didn't
manners.
Do that.
Yeah, well, there, Tom.
Thank you. Mum.
Yes, darling.
I have to say,
yep.
I think that meal was really good.
It was delicious. It was just my type of meal.
We de-Ottolenghi'd, he said.
I know.
Do you think he was offended?
No, I don't think so at all, because I think all the things that we had were delicious. So we bought really good quality fish.
Yeah, thank you, Moxons. We did buy it. So
yeah.
Thank you so much, Morton.
It was fantastic fish. The samphire was great because it was salty and it
that
added
was
to it.
It's finest.
Was it M&S? They do samphire now. And then we had the asparagus was gorgeous. I don't think it lacked anything. And the potatoes with the bay, he'd never heard of that one before.
If I see that in The Guardian in a couple of weeks, well, I'd like a credit, Yotta.
I don't think he'll put anything in without asking.
Maybe you are
actually a cook.
Maybe I'm Heston.
Do you think?
Like a cross between Heston and Yotam. So it's just like...
I'm not. I know what I can do.
I'm just, you know, I take risks. I take risks. What can I say?
It was
I've never
a delicious
eaten so much pudding. You know, I'm not a pudding person.
No.
Mum, you gave me
the thickest slab of that cake, and I thought that I had to finish it to show that, you know, it was an okay pudding. And nobody else finished the pudding.
I couldn't eat any more, darling. It was so much. But I don't know how you could make it any different when you use shredded up phyllo pastry.
It needed, like, to have more air in it.
I don't think... Well, the fact that you have both paddles for the whisk didn't help. So Alex and I had to beat it by hand for 2 minutes.
All right, that's my fault.
Yeah.
Such an interesting man, such a joy, such a... Oh, man, it was such a treat to have him here.
It was just lovely talking about food and family, really.
Yeah, exactly. What the podcast is meant for.
Yeah, it was lovely.
And... it was a bit of a touch when he did cook the turbot.
I think he knew what he was doing.
My salsa verde was sensational.
It was fabulous.
And my smoked potatoes were a treat. Fabulous. So I just feel like I won this one.
Competing with me?
Yeah, just today, give it to me.
Darling, you can have it.
Thank you so much. Alex, we've got a few pointers from
No, it was not his fault. It was not a good recipe, I don't think.
But we will work on that.
I think translating it from the Greek to the English didn't help.
Oh, yeah. That was it. No, we must go in the kitchen with them when we get to Scott Cross in the summer.
I feel weighed down with...
No, honestly.
Porto Calopita.
Man.
Porto probably is an anchor in Greek.
Thank you so much, Yotam Ottolenghi, for being a guest. Somebody that we... adore and admire and are so inspired by, for him to come on our podcast and talk about food and hear it from the horse's mouth, and to be able to give that to all our listeners was just, I think both of us were really soft in our approach today. I felt like we were more tender
because I love him.
No, I know. We adore him. He's kind of like a god to us. So it was just, it was so...
He doesn't behave in a pompous way, though. He's so sweet.
No, he's so sweet. Ottolenghi, what a man. What a chef. What a night. You've been listening to Table Manners, the podcast, and music is by Peter Duffy and Pete Fraser.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please give us 5 stars. We love to read your comments. Not really the mean ones, but please do give us 5 stars if you've enjoyed it.
Should I just read out another comment?
Oh, no.
Okay. Lighthearted and warm. Perhaps less of my son the doctor stuff.
They're just jealous because they haven't got a son who's a doctor.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.